You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I am one of the hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. On this wonderful Friday edition of the show, I will be doing a player recap for Victor Oladipo. Obviously, Vic did not play more than 36 games, so there is not a ton to recap, but there is still some. I will highlight some of his highs and lows of the season, some things I think he can do better on next year, where he go from here. Will he be on the team next year? Hint, he will be, obviously, and a ton more. First, I want to tell you guys, Tony will be back again on Monday with a weekly show once again. At some point, we do want to do a mailbag this in the month of June, probably maybe a draft / free agency mailbag right before the draft range. So look towards our Monday podcast for us to kind of tweet out, to say something, then maybe a tweet out, something like that, to tweet at us some questions. But just a heads up, have in mind some questions because we are in the I think the most fun podcasting time of the year, unless your team is in the NBA Finals, and that is like the draft, free agency, bonanza type of environment. Let's take a quick pause, and then let's get to today's podcast. All right, Victor Oladipo's season essentially is broken up into two halves. You have the first half of the season, which he played pretty well, came out of the gate averaging 21 points per game, six rebounds, five assists on a 44-35-71 shooting split. He looked like basically the same player he was before, maybe even better, I would per se. I mean, I think especially in that first half, there was that extremely powerful game against the Boston Celtics where he hit the game winner and all that stuff. He had a 36-point game in there against Philadelphia. I mean, it was regular old Vic from what we thought from the season before. He was, I mean, just putting up numbers. I mean, he was by far the best player on the team, could get to his spot whenever he wanted to. It just felt like a continuation of the 2017-18 season. We're going to maybe, I would say, even a little more well-rounded in the sense that he was willing to defer a little more and try to find the open man, but he was still taking, I mean, 18 shots per game. It wasn't like he was taking, like, 14. But it felt like he was understanding his role as a guy who is the full point of the offense and can defer at times to open guys in the corners or whatever. You know, the team, I would say, like, if you look at a Turner, Collison, and even really Thad struggled to start the season where Vic did not. I think if we had some overlap of Vic's, you know, awesome play or healthy play even, and the kind of peak Thad, Turner, Collison, you would have maybe seen his assist numbers kind of balloon from like a 5 to a 7 or 8 per game over maybe a 15-20 game stretch. But still, I thought he had a very solid start to the year. There was that, I'm thinking the week span against Chicago, New York, and Boston where he, I don't know if he hit 3 game winners per se, but he had he had 3 just awesome games, if I remember right. I think Chicago, he missed a 3, but Thad put it in. Or not Chicago, New York. Chicago was Turner ultimate block to win the game, but and then Boston, obviously, he hit the, what do we want to call it? I mean, I guess it was game-winning 3. I mean, that was what it was, but so many points that gets up on the clock to seal that one. Then he got hurt, and things shifted. I mean, he played okay when he came back from injury around about a week or two before Christmas, and he ended up playing really till mid-January, which is another, look at it real quick, I believe it was like a 15-game stretch, if you look at it, 20-game stretch, sorry. During this stretch, he averaged 16 points, 5 rebounds, 5.6 assists on 40-34-75 shooting. He clearly looked hobbled. I think one announcer at one point said, you watch him, he looks like he is putting too much weight on one of his legs. Reports were that coaches were yelling at him to basically stop distributing his weight around and limping around or putting too much weight on the opposite knee, where ultimately blew it out. You know, there were some questions about why he even returned. In the rumor world, I had heard that Vic was basically needed season-ending surgery the first time he got hurt, and that he needed to, you know, really get that, let that knee heal and get better before he really could come back and be the player he was in 17-18, and that he kind of rushed himself back, and clearly he did, because the knee injury, I think, correlates pretty well to, or the knee, whatever he had before, knee strain, whatever, I don't know what you would call it, but whatever the knee injury was before he blew out his actual kneecap, definitely related to each other, and that's why he did it. But I understand the desire to come back. I mean, even on kind of a hobbled leg, he is still a really good player, and I think it's a good sign of a player that he's going to become, or it could be once he fully recovers and actually lets his body heal. But it was sort of a interesting 20-game run in the sense that you're watching a guy who you knew wasn't at 100% but was trying to give it his 100%, and maybe he was at, I would say, 75-80% capacity health-wise. And he's still pretty good. I mean, he still had, you know, he still had a 36-point game here against Chicago. You know, he had a bunch of 20-point games. He had a 26-9-6 game against Brooklyn. Like, he wasn't – there were still flashes of the old Vic, but obviously it wasn't a consistent Vic. He was scoring a lot more games in the teens. He was shooting a lot worse. He was shooting a lot more games where it was like 5 of 15 or 5 of 16 or 6 of 14, you know. These low percentage games where he wasn't really becoming the efficient player, because that's where it sort of felt like he had to make the evolution, was from 17-18 to 18-19, was could he be a more efficient player and could he be a more well-rounded player in terms of just, you know, instead of just being the offensive powerhouse he kind of was, where he was a wrecking ball towards the rim and putting up all kinds of layups and contested shots, could he defer at times? Could he become a more, could he become a 40% three-point shooter? Could he become close to a 50-40-90 guy? That was the questions, and obviously he just couldn't get there, mainly because of the last 20 games, especially of his injury, because the first 20 games, he wasn't really at 50-40-90 per se, but he was at that point where he was passing the ball a little more. He had a higher assist rate than he has normally had in his career those first few games. So, you know, it was disappointing to see the setback, because to me, I've never seen a player like Oladipo who can just finish around the rim like the way he was finishing, especially in his first year with the Pacers. I mean, there was times where he would beat a defender, he'd have the guy kind of trailing him or whatever in front of him, and he would use his legs and create space and put off the glass and come to the ground and hard crash and get right back up. And, like, I couldn't believe he made that shot. I mean, especially going from Paul George, a guy who was, especially after the injury, adverse to contact, who was really just wanted to take, it felt like, a bunch of 18-foot jumpers, where Vic felt like he wanted the contact, he thrived in the kind of chaos of around the rim. It's very Russell Westbrook-esque at the time. That's the way Westbrook thrives, where he thrives just around the rim, drawing the contact, pushing his body, you know, using that superb, basically I would call it like jump step, where he can almost fly through the air and get to the rim, uses and create all this space because he's got this amazing agility. And Vic kind of copied that in a sense, but he just didn't have it. I mean, he didn't have it from the injury. You could see it. He sort of had it when the year started, but he just wasn't the player he was in 17-18, and I think the hope is, one, he is very young. He turned 27 earlier this month. This is in May. I guess, of course, probably for Friday. It still will be May when this one posts. But he's still a young player. The injury isn't, like, devastating or career-altering. Like, he didn't, you know, snap his leg enough, which even Paul George came back. But, like, it was one of the injuries where guys come back in 6-8 months per se, so using that timetable, he should be back on the court by July range, maybe more like September range, at least practicing getting back in game shape. Now, I don't know if he's going to start game one of the regular season per se, but, you know, I think the hope is that he'll recover from the injury eventually, that he's so young, he can return to his 17-18 form of this kind of peak Vic, because the player we saw those first 17, 18 games, whatever it was a guy who was legitimately a top 20 All-NBA player. I mean, I can't remember who made third team All-NBA this year, but there was sort of that spot reserved for him, per se, or on the all-defensive teams. You know, this year ended up being Kemba made the last spot. So the last spot on the NBA All-Third Team was Kemba and Westbrook, and I think if Oladipo was healthy, he would have been one of those two guards. I just have a hard time believing that wouldn't have been him, just because he is such I mean, he just, you know, if he was on a Pacer team that won 55 games and he was averaging 20, I mean, let's take his numbers start of the year, 21-6-6. I don't know how he'd leave him off an All-NBA team. You know, I get he would put 25 games, but he was on a winning playoff team and he was the leader on the best team. And that's what makes an All-NBA player. So, hope he can return to that form. I want to take a quick break on the other side and talk about kind of his next season with the Pacers coming up. All right, welcome back in. So I speculated that that Victor Oladipo might not play the first game of the season. Now, the NBA season starts October 18th, 19th, 20th, that sort of range. Injury comparison. So Tony Parker, I think that's the one we've been using a lot, blew out his patella tendon. I think that's what Oladipo blew out. He missed about 6 months. So Vic got hurt on January 23rd, had surgery probably early February. So the six-month time to puts him at around August, which should be easily enough for him to return to play by October. I don't know. I would say it's more probably 6-8 month injury. I would be cautious that maybe they won't play him till November, December range. However, if he can get back onto the court by August and be practicing full September's training camp, that's going to be huge for this team because it's going to be turnover. That's the biggest that's going to affect Vic. He's not going to come back to the same team. You know, of the Thad, Collison, Bojan, at least one of those guys will not be on the team next year, if not two at least in the starting lineup. Bench guys, Kojo is sitting there probably, won't be there now. I mean, I think as expected, you know, that's not really a huge turnover to see a guy like Kyle Quinn leave. Could there be one of the rookies, well, Aaron Holland, but you know, he didn't really play a lot with Aaron Holland or leave. But I think the starting lineup would be the biggest difference, whether it's one, like a Mike Conley slots in, which I think if they trade for Mike Conley or a player of Conley's caliber, there's a chance they try to be more cautious with Vic, assuming they can kind of stem the tide to start the year for a little bit with a, you know, just a quality NBA player or a border-level all-star kind of player. But if he could really get a full offseason under him, like not even full, like a full September under him with the new guys, it would go a long way to helping this team because I think it's going to take some adjusting no matter what. I mean, when you bring in a new guy, you don't just gel day one unless you're the Warriors and Kevin Durant, whatever, because they're like a machine. But most of the Pacers will have to work in this new guard, whether it's a new guard and a new forward or small forward or power forward. They'll have to work them in the lineup and adjust them and whatnot and figure out how to make it all kind of gel, and they probably won't click day one. That's the biggest reason you would say you bring the team back, because you think day one they can kind of click. But I think at some point, too, you bring the team back, you're looking at a really old team. And you're looking at kind of two more years of Vic. And really, this is an audition. I mean, if Vic returns as the player he was before the injury, and I'm talking like 17, 18, first 16 games of the year, Vic, then he is a player who will have his pick of destination at 29 years old when he's a free agent. He will get a max contract, whatever it is at that point, whether it's $30, $35 million. The Pacers will have his bird rights, so that will be able to offer more money than anybody else. But nonetheless, these next 2 years are the Pacers' audition to kind of say, Vic, we can build a team around you. I want you to stay. I want you to be Indiana's guy. I mean, I think that is something he certainly would want if the team can prove, you know, they're not incompetent. You know, kind of the way, I mean, frankly, for Paul George, they got incompetent by the time. I mean, they're playing guys like Monte Ellis and Rodney Stuckey and Al Jefferson with George, and I understand why he wanted to leave. But if they can show to Oladipo, listen, we can get you another point guard next to you that can help kind of carry the load a little bit. You know, Turner's improving. We're keeping some cap flexibility. Conley kind of fits perfectly. That puts him at 2 years right at Vic's free agency. So you can kind of make the argument, well, Vic, we'll re-sign you and we'll go after get another guy. We can clear the cap space depending on what the cap is at the time. I think that's kind of the goal right now, is just say, hey, we're going to try to build around you, but we're not going to like leverage. We're not going to get stupid where we leverage, you know, the next 4 or 5 years for a win now, but we're going to put you in a position where we're going to be good each year. You're going to compete each year. You're going to have a shot to play for the Eastern Conference Finals and NBA Championship. And, you know, hopefully, if we can improve in a couple years, we're consistently, you know, an Eastern Conference Final contender. We can get somebody else to come in here or whatever it is, and maybe one of the years we break through. I don't think Vic needs the ceiling on, like, I don't see Vic as the kind of guy who's going to jump to be, like, the number three guy on a Knicks team next to Durant or Kyrie or whatever it is. You know what I mean? I think there is some of that. He's Indiana's guy. They were the team that was willing to trade for him, take a risk on him, believed in him. He's a Hoosier by college. You know, so there was some that connection where if he was to, you know, if he plays the next, let's say, 7-8 years with the Pacers, that put him at age like 35, right? He goes down as a Pacer legend. I mean, he's up there with, you know, if we're talking strictly with NBA players, I mean, depending on how many All-Stars an All-NBA team makes, he goes up there with the pantheon of the J.O.'s and Reggie Miller level type players. I mean, I think those are the two best Pacers since the NBA. Rick Smits could be in there too. I did a column this one time for Indy Corner. I'm trying to remember what I put as the pantheon. I mean, we're talking ABA. I mean, you're talking Mel Daniels and Roger Brown and those guys. I never watched them play. I can't. I mean, I'm sure those guys probably rank even above anybody else because they won ABA championships. But in terms of NBA Pacers pantheon, Vic has an opportunity to really be. I mean, he probably has a chance to be the best Pacer of all time if he stays 8 more years and they win a championship, and that makes him the best Pacer of all time. Becomes close to an MVP, that would be for sure. But he could be in that pantheon of a J.O. level and Reggie Miller level player. And that's something Paul George really had an opportunity to do. I mean, the Paul George we saw this year would have been the greatest single season for any player in Pacer history. I mean, I've looked at it. J.O. had that 24-10 year where he was close to being MVP, but like Paul George put up 28 points a game this year. He was by far the third best player in the league, I thought, for most of the year. Close to even being second best if he didn't get hurt. I mean, and that's what I think. You know, Paul George didn't have some of the same roots here and care much about that, where I think Vic, part of him, probably does care about that because of his IU roots and all that stuff. And so the Pacers' goal the next 2 years with Vic is, one, to not rush him back so that he can come back healthy, and two, to not just completely screw up the roster around him. Really, you know, keep some flexibility, but take some risks in a sense. So, like, that's what I said. Like, you're not going to go and sign guys to five-year big deals. You know, you're not – I mean – I even would say a Jimmy Butler contract for a 4-year deal is maybe a risk, but like getting guys on 1-2-year deals where you can get out of them at some point and use your cap space as leverage and whatnot. And maybe you don't go all in on 1 year, but you kind of slowly build yourself to all in. So you go after and get one guy this year, and then you get another guy the next year, and that's your all in year, because that's the goal, is to sell Vic. In terms of what Vic can do better next year, I would love to see him play point guard. Now, I don't think it really matters whether he's playing point guard or shooting guard, as long as he has the ball in his hands more. But first, we need to see, can he handle that kind of workload? I mean, that's the one thing you have to worry about with Oladipo, is that he's had a couple injuries throughout his career. So can he handle the workload, you know, like a James Harden who ends up playing 82 games a year and 37 minutes and has the ball in his hands 4% of the time? Can he handle that level of workload? Because if he could, he'd be the best. He is the best point guard they have on the roster right now. And he'd be, it's easier to, go find a two guard than it is to go find a point guard in a way, at least elite level two guard. I mean, you could say Drew Holiday and Mike Conley could be a two guard or a point guard, but I think allowing Vic to be point guard 30-40% of the time is what the team needs in order to be that kind of next level NBA competitor, a team that can really win a championship, compete for a championship. So we'll see what they do this offseason. I'm interested to see what his injury timetable is. Seems to be up and walking around. I don't know if he's lifting weights yet or what he's doing, but he seems to be recovering and doesn't seem to be any setbacks or anything like that. You know, I still hold out hope. August, he's back on the court doing some kind of drills, training, whatever, weightlifting. You know, he has like a no restriction limit in August. That would mean he probably would play at the start of the regular season. I hope they make some moves around him to, you know, improve the roster. I don't think he can, you know, I think part of his injury definitely can be traced back to him carrying the burden of the team. You know, what did Paul Pierce call him? The loneliest superstar in the NBA. I don't know if I disagree with that. I think he's pretty lonely out there. I think, you know, they need some number two creator, guy who you can put the ball in his hands, he can at least get a bucket, and they did not have that last year. Tyree Evans is not the answer, unfortunately. I don't know if it's because Tyree wasn't good or because of some of the other issues he was dealing with, but they did not have that. Turner is still not that answer. I don't think ever will be. So they need somebody, and maybe is it Bogdan now? Bogdan proved himself to be kind of a number, maybe 1B option on a team. He's pretty good for a nice little month stretch there, but, you know, maybe he's best the third option, really, and then you go get a real number two next to Vic. I'm excited about Vic next season. I am always excited about good NBA players. I think he has the opportunity to once again return to form, put up 23 points a game, be an all-star, all-NBA player, you know, really, really compete at the highest levels, prove he's one of the best 15, 20 guys in the league. So I'm excited to see what happens. I'm interested to see what they rank him in the offseason. You know, I wonder how cautious people are about his injury. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with Vic. I appreciate you guys sitting through this podcast. Like I said, Tony and I will be back on Monday. You can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me at Freedom Adam 5. That is all for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Have a great rest of your day.